The following program comes to you as part of the Africa Health Network, a service of the Voice of America to our audience throughout the African continent.
Good evening, everyone. I'm Lina Ahmadou, and welcome to Health Chat. The highly infectious Ebola virus has now claimed more than 1,000 lives in Liberia, Guinea, Sierra Leone, and Nigeria, according to the World Health Organization. Medical professionals and health workers work tirelessly around the clock to prevent the deadly virus from spreading. As healthcare workers struggle to take care of Ebola patients, they themselves become victims due to the highly contagious nature of the virus. On today's program, we will look at the current situation on the Ebola outbreak, as well as discuss how it is affecting the medical professionals. Joining us via phone from Johannesburg, South Africa, is James Kambaki, Head of Human Resources and Field Recruitment of Médecins Sans Frontières, MSF. Mr. Kambaki, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Thank you for being with us today. Let me remind the listeners, if you would like to participate in the program, you can send us your questions or comment via facebook.com/healthchat or call us at 202-619-3111. The U.S. country code is 1, and you can ask your international operator to reverse the charges. We'll start discussing the current Ebola outbreak in a moment, but first, VOA's Anluk has this report.
Dr. Melvin Korkor says he has a pretty good idea how he got Ebola, though it's impossible to know for sure. A woman came into his facility, Phoebe Hospital in Bong County in central Liberia. The patient had no fever, but she was vomiting.
She said she was from Banga instead of Lofa. So, but the next day, I was a little bit suspicious. I said, well, I hope you are not from Lofa because there's every indication that you are a suspect.
They later found out the woman lied. She had come from Lofa, an area at the Sierra Leone and Guinea borders that is at the center of this regional Ebola outbreak. Five nurses from Dr. Kokor's hospital have since died of Ebola. When he tested positive, he was taken to Monrovia and then to Lofa to an isolation ward.
One of the patients that has just expired has just died. They prepared a bed and went in. And my heart became hardened, and I said to myself, I was going to make it. And I told my wife, just bring me my Bible, and that's what I'm going to go by, you know.
He forced himself to eat, even though he did not want food. It was lonely. He tried to stay calm. He saw other patients growing despondent, hopeless, and passing away. He survived.
It was like I was being reborn.
His hospital is now closed while health workers get trained on Ebola. The virus is transmitted through close contact with an Ebola patient's bodily fluids. People caring for the sick are thus at especially high risk. Many health workers in Liberia don't have the necessary protective gear, the masks, the gowns, the eyewear. As a result, health centers and hospitals around Liberia's capital, Monrovia, are shutting their doors. The risk that any patient coming in the doors could have Ebola is simply too great. Nurse Timothy Walker says his clinic didn't even have gloves.
Our friends are dying on a very serious note. We want to die like a dog. When we call them, government can provide protective gear. Sorry, we will not come to work. We are afraid.
Local residents standing outside the shuttered clinic say they are in an impossible situation.
Because if we're sick, we cannot go to native doctor. We don't familiar with native doctor. We got to go to the very clinic, and all clinics are closed down. Even in Unification City, all clinics are closed down. You go all around. Even around the very county, people are calling all that. Even pregnant women, they had to go to clinic, and they need medical facility. They don't have it. So right where we are today, we don't know.
Health workers who continue to work say they are afraid and that people outside the clinic are afraid of them. Physician's assistant McFarlane Kukula.
Whenever you are in uniform, people shy away from you on grounds that you are being infected with Ebola virus, so they don't want to see you, they don't want to ride any car that you are getting.
The dozens of health workers killed during this Ebola outbreak include some who have had access to protective gear. Public health experts say errors are happening. This is the first time most West African doctors and nurses have dealt with Ebola, and people are undertrained and overworked. And look, VOA News, Dakar.
Mr. Kambara, again, welcome to the show, James Kambari with MSF. Let me have your reaction to the report that we heard. I'm thinking, if health workers are afraid, there is major trouble.
I think the fear of dying is everybody's actually. But I think one of those things that we in Doctors Without Borders are saying is that we have to be focused when actually dealing with Ebola. As you know, MSF has treated and managed Ebola in DRC and in Uganda. Where we've managed to handle it, and in most cases there was no MSF staff who has ever contracted the disease thanks to that. So what we do is we actually have to provide staff first with the training so that they will be able to actually manage these cases. Secondly, we have to provide them with protective gear to actually protect themselves. And thirdly, we have to actually work hard to mobilize the public with enough knowledge to actually cut off the transmission because, as you say, the situation now is a bit chaotic because people are afraid. They don't want to tell the doctor, like that case where the patient did not say that they had fever, yet they had fever. Mm-hmm. So if they are aware of that, they could actually be helped. So eventually, of course, the staff becomes afraid because most of their colleagues, they have seen them actually dying. So what Doctors Without Borders is doing, because we are actually working in all those three countries, the epicenter was Guinea, and then it actually moved to Liberia and Sierra Leone. So far, we have treated, we've admitted 848 patients. We have confirmed 467 cases of Ebola in them. And 31% of those patients actually recover if they come early, if they are detected, and if they actually follow the required procedures. So, yes, it's very contagious, but it can actually be managed. That's what we actually have to say.
So you talk about the fact that, you know, the medical personnel receive training, use protective gears, and also mobilization of the public, which is very important. Back to the first point, which is the training. What does it entail? What type of training do you provide them?
One is actually like protection. See, because what we do is that you have to actually wear the gloves, the mask, the clothing in a proper way, because if you don't wear it in a proper way, definitely there's chances that it actually is going to, either the sputum of the blood could actually spill over onto you. Secondly, we actually work with a kind of like a buddy system where people are going to be in that isolation ward for only limited of time. They're going to watch each other, like you're not going to work there alone. You have another buddy who actually checks if you make mistakes, if you are still focused. So you check each other out. The third is that we have specific protocols for things. So we try as much as possible to avoid pricking patients, like giving injections. So we rely mostly on oral medications in this particular regard so that you don't actually expose so much into actually making errors and actually like pricking yourself. The other thing is that we try as much as possible to offer the palliative care. So we replace the fluids because patients actually like lose a lot of fluids. We try to reduce the fever because there's high fever. So we have specific protocols that we actually train patients, people, the staff on so that they can actually follow when doing that. And then people should actually not overwork. So we allow medical staff to be in the isolation ward only for 2 hours at a time. Mm-hmm. So if you're more than that, you have more chances of actually making errors. And this error is what is called, of course, now the contamination.
Okay, okay. So then when you look at the big picture, you think that the fact that it's the first time the outbreak is happening in West Africa has also been a part of the fact that it's spreading so widely because the health medical workers there are not familiar with the disease?
Yes, I can say I think it's definitely it's because the disease is new in the area. But I can say the general public is not familiar with this disease.
Okay.
So the panic takes over. The emotional aspect so it takes over a lot, and people actually stop thinking. People are afraid. People hide their loved ones when they are when they die of Ebola. They don't report. People do not allow health workers to help them. Then they chase them away because they think the health workers are the ones actually spreading the disease. So there's low level of awareness about the disease in the general public, which actually makes it so difficult to trace contacts, to actually create epidemiological surveillance, to coordinate the activity so that people can identify where the gaps are, so that each particular organization or the Ministry of Health or MSF can actually work in that particular. So somebody else doing the treatment of patients, somebody else doing the treating of patients, somebody else is doing health promotion and health education to the public. Somebody else is taking care of decontaminating the bodies and the places where people have been infected. So this has to be well organized in a way that you can actually cut off the transmission. So if this is done, so the lower level of knowledge of the disease in the area actually causes much more spread of the disease.
Now, let's talk about what is considered a state of emergency. Nigeria just declared one after about 10 victims. It declared a state of emergency. Sierra Leone declared one not long ago. At what point for MSF that has been working on the Ebola outbreaks in the Central African region, at what point do you think government should declare a state of emergency? Because it seems that's when a lot of people are aware that the situation is very critical. Because this has been ongoing since February, and it's only now that it seems that we see government really taking steps.
I think we are not yet very sure of the impacts of the state of emergency, what impact it will actually bring. But I think this mobilization of resources should come in all angles. One, I think the government, by possibly declaring the state of emergency, they show that they are very serious. So possibility of the public adhering to that is possible. But we have to actually be realistic that people are really afraid. People are scared. So this is also something that we have to say, okay, we have to wait and see if the impact of state of emergency can actually have an impact on actually cutting the transmission.
Mm-hmm.
But I think there's a lot of political goodwill that needs to come from authorities, from the political leaders, passing these messages about how people should actually like care for themselves is very, very crucial. So the political leaders should actually, you know, lead from the front by passing the necessary messages. The public should be educated on how to actually stop the transmission or not transmitting. Care of the traditional ways, you know, of dealing with the dead. Of course, we respect that, and I think everybody does. But at this particular emergency, I think there should be a change of ways that this has been dealt with. And so I think the government should actually come much more strongly, not only declaring state of emergency, which could be something, mm-hmm. but also like really lead with the messages.
Now, why was there, it seems that there was a delay in international relief to address the outbreak. MSF has been on the ground for the longest time within in this epidemic, if not from the very first day, and correct me if I'm wrong. But it seems like the international response, the international community's reaction took some time before people really realized that this is not just a localized issue. This is potentially an international issue.
Yes, I think there was definitely a delay in actually responding to this from the others. I don't want to like praise our intervention, our organization much more, because I think many people did not expect that it would go this far to also spread into the three other countries. Mm-hmm. But I think, you know, this type of emergency, it's overwhelming. It takes so much resources. Mm-hmm. As you know, we as MSF, we usually send our staff to work in particular projects for 6 months and over. But because of the nature on the intensity of these outbreaks, we only send them for 2 months. So that means that there will be so much turnover of human resources that needs to go into these projects. And this is actually one of those things that has actually like overwhelmed MSF as well, especially when it's actually spread into different countries. For now, we have at least about 676 staff working on Ebola in those three countries. We actually take the biggest chunk of really dealing with the most critical, so setting up different isolation wards. In Sierra Leone, we have 80-bed isolation wards that we are working. We are also increasing it to another 30 in another particular location where now there's new cases that have come in. In Liberia, we are already supporting the Ministry of Health in setting up a 60-bed capacity isolation ward. In Guinea, where we have actually started, we work with over 300 staff in that particular place. Definitely this, especially compared to what is happening right now, is actually a drop in the ocean. Mm-hmm. All this organization needs to come up and actually like continue establishing other isolation wards in the hot points. All the other organization needs to come up and actually like identify the gap and do something about it. Let's say contact tracing, mobilization of the public, disinfection of the bodies and areas, creating an environment where, because we need to now create the trust with the public that they have to actually start going back to the facilities, because right now, of course, we are focusing on Ebola, but you know that people are actually not going to the hospitals for other reasons that they used to, like for deliveries, for example, or for other normal medical conditions. So we could also see people actually being the morbidity will increase on other diseases that was actually being handled by these hospitals. Mm-hmm. So there was delay. But there's still much more that needs to be done at this particular moment.
Okay, and Mr. Kambaki, we have a caller, Buba from Nigeria. Welcome to the show. Hello, Buba. Yes, welcome to Kaduna, Health Chat.
Kaduna, Nigeria. Now, my question is there any vaccine for immunity to Ebola? Now, because what we observe is some of people are resistant to Ebola. Is there any specific vaccine that has been discovered to have been for immunity to Ebola? Thank you very much. It's been Buba Umariaza.
Thank you, yeah. Buba. So his question is about vaccine.
Until now, there's no vaccine that has been proven that it can actually work. I think there's so many trials that is being tested and will actually take place. Several companies are working on the vaccine, Smiclin, and Glaxo, as well as other companies. They actually like thinking that these trials will take up to the end of 2015 to actually come up with the vaccines that is potent. But I think because for me the vaccines and also the new drug that is also been given to the two Americans, I think it's good thing, but could actually cause some distraction, could distract people from the real issue here. The real issue here is we need to cut off the transmission. Mm-hmm. We need to trace those people who have gotten the disease and put them in isolation ward and treat them. We need to actually educate people not to contaminate or to use the possible ways they can get more contaminated. We know that we can beat this thing if we have a good, proper education to the public that we need to cut off the transmission. So if all these procedures are followed, it's possible to actually do it. Vaccines, yes, it's a good thing to have, but at this particular moment, until possibly the end of 2015, we don't know.
We don't know. Okay. I have a question from Ahmed in Sierra Leone, and he wants to know, he says, is hand washing with soap enough to protect against Ebola, or do we need to incorporate other substances when we wash our hands?
I think one thing that we want to actually possibly educate the public is that Ebola is very virulent and could actually be transmitted quite easily from the people who have already shown signs of illness. They are very sick. And that's why when dealing with the dead bodies, it's so easy to actually get contaminated, because that is when Ebola is very, very virulent. It could actually easily be transmitted. When somebody gets Ebola, for the first 21 days, usually it cannot be transmitted. Yeah. So using washing hands is quite okay. But the thing is that when you have a sick person, getting contaminated with the fluids the fluids from another, even if you wash hands, then it's not the only answer. I think what we need to do is possibly, like, if somebody is very sick, there's vomiting, there's bleeding, people should not touch that particular body, even if there's hand washing place to wash hands. So washing hands is a good thing. You should be encouraged, but it's not the only thing. So please, best avoid the really sick people, to touch them without gloves, without proper proper care to actually handle the dead bodies. If somebody is dead, please call those people who are able to actually handle it properly.
Okay. Now let's talk about recruitment, because this is something that you oversee in your work. When you are recruiting personnel to intervene in a situation like the Ebola outbreak, where it's very virulent and highly contagious, who do you look for? Do you look for personnel that has experience with the specific outbreak or the specific problem that they are going to deal with? Or do you look for people with specific knowledge and experience? I'm just trying to understand, how do you choose the people to send?
Okay. I think one of the things that we choose is we want highly qualified people. So infectious disease doctors, specialists, engineers who have actually dealt with water and sanitation before, and then they should, of course, it's possible if they have Ebola or hemorrhagic fever experience, which is usually like difficult to find. So we say, let's get those who have high skill in infection control, and we train them so that they can actually do this work, because all our staff right now who had Ebola, Marburg, or any hemorrhagic fever, we have already disposed them to, we have already posted them in those three countries, and we have no other staff left. So we are actually like recruiting those who are highly skilled, quite healthy, because we also, you know, to work in an isolation ward, you have to be very focused. So they have to be very healthy. They have to be very disciplined as well, because we have very specific instructions that we want to be followed. So highly focused and disciplined people who can actually follow instructions when given. And that's why we don't actually have a lot of people, because this criteria that we use to actually recruit is very strict. And we still encourage people who have any experience, skills, to come forward and actually see if we could actually use them for this particular outbreak.
Now, we've seen the Spanish priest who was working in Liberia just died from the infection. He was transferred to Spain. And we've seen that there were other workers, the United States work helpers that were sent here to receive treatment. And according to report, they are doing better. Then we have all the local staff that have been affected, perhaps infected, and some people died. When you look at this, how does these outcomes impact recruitment for Ebola intervention? Do you think people are scared? Are you having difficulties finding volunteers to go to handle this crisis?
Yes, we definitely have difficulties. I just have two of my doctors who have declined to go to work in this country. I still have other two still willing to go. What we do in advance is really to ensure that their health is good, they are well trained, they receive all the necessary information, they receive also a post. You know, when they come back from these countries, also we actually follow them up to ensure that they receive good care. So it's not easy. It's really not easy. Some of them are excited at the beginning, like, oh, I can go and help. But when we start sending them information so that they can prepare, they actually decline and say, maybe not at this particular time. I can go later, or something like that. So it's not easy. I think everyone is facing the same difficulties now to actually get staff who are skilled enough to actually go there.
Very challenging. And I'm going to end with the final question, and you can, you know, comment on it very briefly. There is Alexi in Cote d'Ivoire. He says, official in my country have banned air travelers from Liberia, Guinea, and Sierra Leone as a way to prevent the infection to come to my country. Is this enough, or is air traveling one of the ways for prevention, and is it enough? What would you say to that?
I just say, like, preventing air travel is not the answer. If I can say now, if, for example, we prevent flights to go to Liberia, to go to Sierra Leone and Guinea, what will happen to those people who need help?
Yes.
Because they'll need other people to come in and support them. And so if you close your borders for the fear of Ebola, if you have an outbreak that comes in from the ground, are people going to come and help your country? For me, I don't think stopping the flights from coming into different countries is the answer.
Okay.
What they could do is to actually enhance the surveillance,
okay.
Enhance their protective measure, enhance the knowledge of the public and of those flight attendants to actually know what
Mr. Kumbaki,
when it comes to the Ebola.
Thank you so much for joining us. That's all the time we have. Thank you. That was James Kumbaki, Head of Human Resources and Field Recruitment of MSF Médecins Sans Frontières. I'm your host, Lenore Moudou, in Washington, D.C., with producer Jackson Mbunganyi. Until next time, take care, be well, and strive to make every day a healthy day.